Jesus was led to the cross to be executed, along with two other men who were both criminals, on a hill called the Skull. All three of them were crucified. One criminal on his right, and the other on his left. As they erected his cross, he looked at his executioners and said,
"Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they're doing."
One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him, saying, "Don't you fear God? We are punished justly, but this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him,
"Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise."
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Kamloops Alliance. My name is Chris. I'm glad that you're here. We're in a series called Famous Last Words. And we just are looking at the cross for the next 7 weeks as we journey towards Easter. We just believe, and you even know, the last will and testament, whether it's even at a retirement party or like a deathbed last will and testament, that these are the words that matter. So Jesus hung on the cross for 6 hours. And in those 6 hours, he said seven statements that throughout church history, we've really identified and thought about as his last words. And the question is, who are you when you're pressed? Like when things are bad, when it is not going your way, who are you? And obviously, when you look at Jesus on the cross, you see a picture of someone that is way different than you or I. I mean, when you stub your toe, what's the first word that comes out of your mouth? And this is because when we are pressed, we actually are exposed for who we actually are. This was in 2004. I was saving money for school. I was working for a company that cleaned HVAC units in houses and commercial properties as well. This was right after the Okanagan Mountain Park fire in Kelowna. And so every house, every business that had an insurance claim had to get their system cleaned. And so we were working long days, 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hour days. This was in the winter. I was tired. I was frustrated. I just wanted to get home after a long day. And so my job was to clean up kind of all of our equipment and pack it into the truck and then move on. So I'm cleaning up everything, and there's a slight incline on this driveway, and I fall. I fall right on my keister, and I'm not happy, and I'm tired, and I'm cold. And then my job was to wrap up the high-pressure PSI hose into the truck. Well, because it was cold, it wasn't wrapping properly, and it was all tangled, and I got so, so mad. And so I took this hose, and I threw it on the ground. But when I threw it on the ground, the nozzle for the high-pressure air hose hit the ground, and it jumped right back up at me at a high rate of speed. And let's just say it hit me in a very sensitive part of my body, and I'll leave it there, and I completely lost it. Like, nobody was around, but I completely lost it because I was so pressed and so mad. And that's what came out. When you see these statements of Jesus, you get a very different picture. And so what we're doing is we're just staring at the cross leading up till Easter. We're staring at the cross. And it's so weird if you think about it that the cross for Christians is the central symbol of our faith. And for you, for me, it's kind of normal to think like that, but it's actually crazy because the cross was and is was a tool from the Roman Empire of execution. It would be like having at the symbol of a faith or a belief system an executioner's chair. It's like, what is that? But for us, that's what the cross is. And it is so widely known. You go anywhere in the world, people know what the symbol of the cross is. It's like Coca-Cola or Nike. You see those symbols anywhere, you know what it is. And the cross, as we stare at it, is obscene. For us, it may be lost on you, but this is an actual obscene thing. The four Gospels include the crucifixion. And what they say, as we will see, is, and they were crucified. In other words, the Gospel writers don't give any detail to the act or process of crucifixion. Why? Because it is so obscene. It is on the cross where people bleed out their bodily functions. There's groaning. There's agony. This is the worst way to die. It is obscene. It is painful. Did you know that the word excruciating gets its roots from the cross? Literally, it means overwhelming, intense pain of the cross. This was the worst way to die, and it was public. It was meant to humiliate in a public way. First century historians, ancient historians, talked about that the Roman Empire would use this as a warning mechanism. As people walked in and out of major centers, they would crucify people so that you would have to walk by these people who are either dead or in the process of dying as a warning for anybody who would rebel against the Roman Empire. This is what happens to you, that this was public, it was obscene, it was excruciating, and yet here we are as a church staring at it for 7 weeks. Why? Because we think it matters and it's transformative. So what I want you to do is go into your Bibles in Luke chapter 23 as we look at the second statement of Jesus on the cross. And here's what we see when we pick it up in verse 32. It says, two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. Two other criminals. The two words I want to focus in on is out and with. Where is Jesus? Jesus is being led out of the city gates, out of Jerusalem, to Golgotha, the place of the skull. He is outside of the city gates. Inside the city gates is a sense of control, a sense of even peace or protection. Inside the city gates is suburbia. It is clean and sanitized decently. Outside the city gates, well, you don't know. You're kind of on your own. And where is Jesus? He is outside the city gates. And who is he with? He is with two criminals, that this is the life and ministry of Jesus outside the city gates with two criminals. He is with those people. It's interesting, the Old Testament, one of the primary kind of foreshadowing texts of the death of Jesus is Isaiah 53. And Isaiah 53 verse 12 says this, therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life until death. Listen to this. And he was numbered with the transgressors. He was numbered with them outside the city gates with criminals. This is Jesus numbered. He wasn't numbered with the elite. He wasn't numbered with the Instagram influencers. He wasn't numbered with those who had it all together. Who was he numbered with? With those people. With those people. This was true in his death. It was also true in his ministry. That in the ministry of Jesus, he goes to those people that make maybe you and I feel uncomfortable. Those are the people who he's with. Think about in John chapter 4, he meets a woman, a Samaritan woman, a half-breed to the Jews, a Samaritan woman at the well, unheard of. He is with those people. Later on, you'll read in Matthew chapter 26 that he's at the home of a religious elite person, and a prostitute comes in and anoints his feet, just absolutely pours love on Jesus, and he doesn't shun her. In fact, he brings dignity to her. Mark chapter 1, what you'd see there is that Jesus is with the lepers. The lepers. These are the people, the social outcasts. Why? Because if you touch a leper, you will get leprosy. Imagine you today going to RIH or your local hospital and going into the COVID ward. Going into the COVID ward without a mask, going into that place, loving, bringing food, touching, loving those people. Imagine that. This is what Jesus is doing. He is breaking down every societal barrier to those people. He is outside the city gates, and who's he with? He is with common criminals, bandits, and thieves. That's who Jesus is with, and that's who Jesus dies for, those people. I remember as a kid, we had season tickets to the BC Lions for a few years, and we would park under the Knight Street Bridge, and then we would walk in, we'd see the game, and we'd walk out. And I remember as a little kid, walking out of BC Place Stadium and asking my dad, it smells like skunk. Why does it smell like skunk in this city? My dad's like, oh, okay, well, that's marijuana, and it's a drug. And then I remember sometimes we would take the SkyTrain home, and I would smell beer, and I grew up in a house where there wasn't beer. And so I'd be like, well, what does that smell? And my dad's like, well, that's beer. And then when we'd walk back, we'd walk under the Knight Street Bridge, and it was like a light commercial area, and it'd be a Friday, Saturday night, and there'd be people who would be standing on the sides of the streets, women. And I'd ask my dad, what are these people doing? And so my dad's like, well, you know, that's the prostitute. And he'd have to tell me about all of these things that were so foreign to me. And I remember back then thinking like, those people that make me maybe feel uncomfortable or live a different way than me, think differently. And listen to me, all of us have those people. Whether you're rich or poor or black or white or indigenous or white or whatever you are, that we all have those people who think differently than us, who speak differently than us, who smell differently than us, who have a past that's different than us, who are less educated than us. All of us have those people. And we see in the ministry of Jesus, he is going out with them. And so ever since then, followers of Jesus have gone out and with those people. And I want to introduce you to somebody in our congregation who is doing that right now. I'm here with my friend, Darren Donas. Darren, introduce us to you.
Yeah, my name is Darren Donas, and I am married, my wife Yolande, have two sons, Jonathan and Daniel, and been living here in Kamloops for about 20 years. First moved here in 2000 as a pastor, and then I was in business for a period of time, and now I'm currently a prison chaplain.
Cool. Tell us about your kind of tenure at KAC, involvement here at our church.
Yeah, I became more involved and joined the church here about 6.5 years ago, currently serving as an elder on the board, as well as being involved in Alpha, various areas of outreach. Missions is kind of my passion, and that's also led me into my current role as a prison chaplain.
Very cool. You have now switched your credentials from the denomination that you served in, and now with the Christian Missionary Alliance, so an approved chaplain, kind of another branch and arm of KAC, the Christian Missionary Alliance, into the correctional facility here. That is such a cool thing for us. I mean, I don't know if you are aware of it, but it's such a cool thing for us to be able to send you, love you, and support you as you go. So tell us a little bit more about your role at the correctional facility now. What do you do as chaplain?
For sure. So I came into this role as a prison chaplain actually through volunteering there. I originally went there about four years ago, just doing some volunteer services on a Sunday evening. And then the position came available, and it wasn't something that I was initially thinking about doing, but it seemed to be a really good fit. Now that I've been there for about 3.5 years now, I love what I do. I don't necessarily love why men are there, but certainly being able to be a friend, come alongside and just share the gospel with them is a great privilege. Some of the roles or some of the things that I do there are prison chapel services. So for instance, today I'll be having two chapel services with two of the units.
Cool.
There's 8 units. So I do about 7 chapels a week. And currently, on the weekends, we would normally have volunteers come in, but obviously with COVID and the current protocols, there's no volunteers.
Right.
So a little extra workload, but as my family well knows, I have the gift of gab. So
that's right. Awesome. That helps you.
Yeah, it does help in that regard. I'm a bit of an extrovert, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
So how do you see Jesus at work in the men that you interact with and serve? They find themselves in jail, probably have a captive ear. So tell us maybe how you see Jesus at work now in the middle of a place that not many of us go to.
Yeah, it's definitely not an environment that we would be normally comfortable with for the reasons that are obvious. jokingly say that I do have a captive audience, but I also sensitively say that because of the fact that I count it a great privilege,
of course,
to come alongside of these men in terms of their story, their journey, their family, the things that they'll share with me. They often will remove themselves from engaging with family members. It's a sad reality. Mm-hmm. Because it's too much of a reminder when they get off that phone call for them that they're going to be there for that much longer and away from their family.
Right.
So being able to come alongside them and be able to be a friend and also sharing the gospel with them is a great privilege. Mm-hmm. We have a designated chapel in our facility, which is a great blessing as well. Not all facilities have that. So a particular place where guys can come.
Right.
And just know that it is a different place as far as them being in a regular unit coming there. So it's a great privilege, and I enjoy what I do.
Do you see the men that you're working with reach out in humility to Jesus?
Yeah. There's obviously an aspect of what I clarify or explain it to be a very raw environment.
Yeah.
The rawness of the environment is that men there know, for the most part, why they're there. Mm-hmm. It's also very clearly evident sometimes through the newspaper and people read.
Right.
And I get comments all the time, do you know this person?
Right.
Do you know this
yeah,
person?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I often think in the back of my mind, I understand what people are saying when they say, do they know what they read in the newspaper? But actually getting to know somebody.
Yeah.
Is a tremendous privilege. Mm-hmm. I believe that, you know, Jesus had a unique, I don't want to say ability, but he had a sight, a view on a human being that looked beyond their behavior, looked beyond the list of faults and errors and sins that they had committed, and to see the humanity, the image and likeness of God that's potential in every human being. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I find myself sitting often is looking beyond what I know that individual is in for and getting to know them as a human being and kind of drawing out that humanity. And it's amazing to see that sensitivity and like I say, the rawness that comes forth when individuals do open up in humility. They confess their sins to God. They confess sometimes just being able to share with me and talk about some of the things that they've done.
Right.
So there is an interesting journey that I see individuals go because I work with them on such an ongoing basis. I often refer to the story of the prodigal.
Yeah.
And you can see there's a progression of the prodigal coming back to the father. And it says when he came to himself.
Right. Yeah. That's
then great. He said, I will return. And I always look for that key turning moment in these men where they're looking at themselves, no longer kind of making an excuse and looking at why they're there, but saying, what am I doing with my life?
Right.
And it's at that moment that the Father becomes so real to them.
That's cool.
And I just count it a privilege, like I said, to be able to introduce them to the Father.
The men that you interact with would be considered those people, right? They're those people. Yeah. They're on the outside of our town, right?
Yeah.
They're out there. Why in the world, Darren, do you do what you do? Why are you there?
Yeah. I truly believe, both on my, I guess, theology level, my understanding of who Christ is and what Christianity represents. Romans chapter 5 says, God demonstrated his love to us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us.
Awesome.
The enmity that it was created because of sin, that separation, exists in all of us to various degrees. For these men, it's just put in front of them every day.
Yeah.
It's like having your sins brought before you every day or being reminded of them.
Right.
And so to be able to see beyond that and why do I do what I do is just to realize that Christ came to die for sinners.
Amen.
That he gave his life for an individual like me. And I know that there are men that are in that place that have done horrible things. Mm-hmm. They've hurt themselves. They've hurt others. Mm-hmm. And we don't ignore any of that. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, there's still a human being there that does have the potential to reflect the image and likeness of God.
That's right. How can we as a church support, pray for you?
The best way for you to support me currently is to pray.
Yeah.
Pray for the ministry that does exist, not only in our center here in Kamloops, but various centers throughout BC.
Yeah.
I work in a provincial institution. Unlike federal institutions, there's a little bit of difference in terms of how the chaplains are positioned. Actually, I'm a government employee, which is a great privilege within BC.
Yeah.
And there are a number of chaplains throughout BC that are doing what I do.
Sure.
So asking you to pray for the Ministry of Prison Chaplaincy is certainly something I would ask for. As far as on the practical level, normally we would have volunteers, different groups, music groups coming in, Alpha, just opportunities to come in and interact with these men.
Yeah.
We're certainly going to be introducing that again once COVID, kind of the whole protocols and restrictions are removed. On the community level, I also work very closely with the Mustard Seed, for instance, other treatment facilities, Vision Quest, there's other places where we as a church may be able to and are currently involved in terms of volunteering. Cool.
Yeah.
But I'm also looking forward to, and I mean, we were talking about this prior to COVID, and certainly the vision is to go beyond.
Yeah.
For us to be a church that's a light on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And I think situationally, geographically, we're in an area where we know if we just walk down the street, there are individuals that are either mm-hmm. on the cusp of being mm-hmm. incarcerated mm-hmm. or in a lifestyle that could lead them that way.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to reach out to them and be available to them.
Yeah.
And then also working with, like I said, other organizations, and even starting our own, what I would call a bridge building kind of ministry down the road.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
And we'll
Me
be
too.
Discussing and certainly be looking at more of that later.
Very cool.
For sure.
Darren, thanks for being a great example to us, modeling the ministry of Jesus who goes, ministers, identifies with those people. And may we be a church that does the same.
So we pick up the story. In verse 33, it says, when they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there. See, they don't actually give details. They just say they crucified him because it was so obscene. They crucified him there along with the criminals. So there Jesus is on a Roman execution tool with two criminals. He is in the middle of them. Pick up the story in verse 35. It says, the people stood watching. This is public. And the rulers sneered. The rulers, both the Roman rulers and the Jewish rulers, are sneering at Jesus while he is dying on a cross. So the people are watching. The rulers are sneering. Verse 36, the soldiers also come up and mock him. The people are watching. The rulers are sneering. The soldiers are mocking. And then in verse 39, it says, one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. He is being mocked and sneered at, and he is being thrown insults by one of these criminals. The question is to you, how do you view the cross? How do you view the cross? Because here's what we're going to see, is we see two different ways to view the cross. This one criminal, he's hanging there. I love that. He's hanging, dying alongside Jesus. And here's what, when he is pressed, here's what he says. Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us. He looks at the cross as what it is. A symbol of tragedy, of defeat, of scorn, of shame. The only thing that people would see when they looked at the cross in the first century was something of embarrassment. And this criminal just sees that. He sees this false, to him, false Jewish Messiah dying an embarrassing criminal's death. See, how you view the cross ultimately matters. There are many things about church that we view that are give or take. They're non-essentials, we'd say. The mode and method of communion or baptism. It doesn't, there's different ways to think about that. But listen to me. The way you view the cross is essential. It matters to who you are, and it matters for your eternity of how you view the cross. And so here's option one of how you view the cross, that it's weak, it's powerless, and it is shameful. There is no power here, that this is a very terrible way to die. And this criminal, with his past, one who has resorted to violence and stealing to make ends meet, he looks at Jesus and says, absolutely not. He thinks that Jesus is a joke. all of his ministry, all of the claims are absolute jokes, and it can be deleted from memory. It doesn't have any bearing on this man. Even in his death, it has no bearing on his life. He says, I can do whatever I want, even hurling insults at this man. So when this man is pressed, what do you see? You see pride. And in this, let me just say, you see the idiocy of sin. You see the idiocy of sin. Somebody who has lived a very, very backwards, bankrupt life. Now, even in his death, when he has the option to repent, to get right with Jesus, he says, absolutely not. He hurls insults at him. And then, verse 40, there's the other criminal. It says, but the other criminal rebuked him. This is option two. How do you view the cross? This is option two, because he rebukes this other criminal. In the same moment, the same experience, he says, don't you fear God? This is the end of verse 40. Don't you fear God? In other words, he's trying to get this other criminal's attention. It's the same event, the same experience, and yet two vastly different ways to interpret the meaning of the cross. How do you view the cross? Because it matters deeply. He goes on, he says, don't you fear God? In other words, he says, you know what? I am seeing this through another lens. This isn't just another false Jewish Messiah dying a terrible death. No. This man, Jesus, is God. And central to the claims of Christianity is that. If you view Jesus as just another good human being that lived a good life, was a good teacher, then the cross is just a terrible end to a rather good life. But if you see him as God, then it changes everything. It changes everything. Don't you fear God, he said. Listen, since you are under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. The wages of this life is death. And the Bible says, in a spiritual sense, the wages of your sin is death. That the just payment for their life demanded this end in that time. And listen to me, the just payment for a life lived apart from Jesus is death. And these men are physically living out what is spiritually true for you and I when we look at Jesus and say, no, this is not him dying as God. And I love this criminal, because he says, but this man has done nothing wrong, that he sees Jesus through a different lens, and this is the lens of humility and of faith. And when this criminal is pressed, what comes out? It comes out humility, because he says in verse 42, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Remember me when you come into your kingdom. The first criminal, when he's pressed, pride. This criminal, when he's pressed, is humble. And these two criminals die. That their life ends, and one of them experiences life with Jesus forever, and the other one, we don't know what happens. His denial of Jesus ends without him. It's to this humble plea from the second criminal that Jesus says this, truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. Today you will be with me in paradise. When Jesus is pressed, when he is dying out on this obscene, public, excruciating way to die, he doesn't respond in pride. He responds with grace. Who is this God? Who is this man that on the cross, when he is bleeding out, one criminal who deserves death, ask, would you today remember me in your kingdom? Jesus says, today you will be with me in paradise. This is the kindness of God that we see in Jesus. That even at the worst moments, even in the moments that we've been pressed, even in the toughest times, when we cry out in humility, we are met with grace and we are met with invitation. Today, you will be with me. I love that this criminal says, when you enter your kingdom, and Jesus says, that's today. It is immediate. That when we cry out in faith to Jesus, his response to us isn't, I'll get back to you. It is, today you will be with me in paradise. This word paradise actually connotes this idea of a garden, of the Edenic garden that you would understand and see and read about in Genesis chapter 1. In other words, today you were welcomed into relationship with me like Adam and Eve experienced, that all of the brokenness and all of the stealing and all of the criminal's life is forgiven, and today you are with me in paradise, that this criminal receives what he doesn't deserve. Why? Because the gospel of Jesus comes to this man in this moment, and his life of criminal activity intersects and collides with Jesus's at the last moment, and even then, scandalous, loving, pursuing grace is strong enough and big enough to save him. So how do you view the cross? I want to say to you that whatever your past is, whatever has come, it is never too late for a deathbed confession. Today, not when, but today you will be with me, that there is a forgiveness and a love that Jesus has. And so the punishment was death for these criminals. And so it is with us in a spiritual sense when you and I are convinced of our own self-righteousness and goodness, that you see Jesus on the cross. You have an understanding, a familiarity. Maybe you grew up in church, but you've left it. It was backwards. You don't want it anymore. But listen to me. When you look at the cross, you have to come to grips with what is happening there and its effect on your life. Its effect on your life. This is not just a historical event, but this is about you and your brokenness and your pride and your sin and your self-righteousness and your lust and your secrets, and all of that stuff meets and collides on the cross, because this is what Jesus has died for and this is what Jesus has died about. So what is your response to the cross? It greatly matters. Is it pride that Jesus is a joke? Or is it humility? In 2004, Mel Gibson produced The Passion of the Christ. I don't know if you've seen the movie. It's hard to watch. But just after it was released, I remember going to the theater and watching The Passion of the Christ, which in some accurate way, not completely, gives you a view into the cross. And after you go through this journey, you see the scourging, you see the cross, you see his death, and then the last few seconds of this film is the resurrection. I'll never forget the feeling in that movie theater when the screen shut off and the movie was done. It was silent. And you had people there who had no affinity to Jesus, and you had people like me in there who had affinity and love of Jesus, but it was silent and nobody moved. Because when you are met with the story of the cross, listen to me, it is heart-melting. And if you would be so courageous in this season to journey with us staring at the cross, not only is it heart-melting, but listen to me, it is life-transforming. And in humility, we reach out to Jesus with our plea. Remember me, Jesus. And what he said back then and what he says to us today is one of warmth and invitation, that today you'll be with me in paradise. And oh man, is this good news for those of us who need Jesus in this season. What we're going to do now. So we're going to transition to a little bit of a question time for you. If you're just on your own, we'd love for you to reflect on these questions. If you're with your family, there's just a few questions that will help you understand this a little bit more. Talk to each other about this. And then there's a great response song that we want you to stick with us and maybe reflect in your own space, your own prayer life, about what this means for you. We thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.